Would you consider yourself to be a good manager or even a great manager? Or are you about to recruit staff and become an instant overnight leader? If you want to ensure high efficiency and a thriving, supportive environment within your team, you need to be more than just an expert in your field. You need to know what your team needs from you, and you need to be human. Today, I'm chatting with Hiam Sakakini, who is providing some amazing insight and succinct tips around what makes a great manager. Let's jump in. Welcome to the Marketing and Me podcast. If you're eager to grow your health and wellness business via effective marketing methods while maintaining your own health and wellness, this podcast is for you. I'm your host, Leanne Shelton, a health and wellness copywriter and content marketing trainer who's here to help perfect your message, then find the right channels to send it out into the scary online world with the ultimate goal of making it heard and seen by your ideal client. Because I know you have a message that needs to be heard, and I know you want to make a big impact on the world. By becoming more visible in the online space, you can attract and retain your ideal customers. So feel free to book in a free 15-minute chat with me after listening to today's episode. The details are in the show notes. And today, I'm joined by my guest, Hiam Sakakini. Welcome, Hiam.
Hello. Thank you.
Yes, thanks so much. It's great to chat with you. I'll just give you everyone a little rundown of who you are and read out your bio. So like many of us, Hiam's career itself has been an interesting journey with twists and turns taking her from sales manager to head of leadership at Google. Super cool. I want to touch on that later. Along the path, she lived and breathed the unique experience of how technology disrupts industries and how to navigate that change successfully through your people. As a sociology major and culture change expert, her drive is to create environments founded on trust and psychological safety where teams can be empowered and thrive. All very cool. Lots of awesome buzzwords there. But yes, I want to hear more about your time at Google. How did you score that gig?
Oh, it was well over, 15 years ago, 2007. So yeah, quite some time ago.
Yep.
And I really didn't know that Google was in any way a big deal back then. It was just another one of those dot-coms that was up and coming, and everybody was saying it's a bit cool and funky and had the bean bags and the lava lamps and all that. I was working in a company. I was actually working in DHL at the time. And I just decided after 4 years I was up for something different. I drafted a list of my top 10 companies I wanted to work for. And I think Google was number 7 or 8. So it really wasn't featuring at the top. I fancied myself as a bit of a retail expert. I think I was like applying for L'Oreal and Chanel and those sorts of organizations at the time. But I decided to just go ahead and give it a shot. And I got a call. And 7 interviews later, over 3 months,
whoa. I got it. That's insane.
It was an insane recruitment process, which in itself made me really curious about this organization. It was so different considering I had been interviewing with multiple companies at the same time. Theirs was so, so different that I decided I wanted to see it through and just see what came out the other end, even though that actually meant me rejecting other jobs that had already made an offer in the meantime.
I was going to say, yeah, what do you do? Yeah. Do you put things on hold for the possibility of this amazing opportunity, or do you say yes, sell things like all of your eggs in one basket type of thing?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I was entry level at the time. I was only in my mid-20s. And so, you know, this big gamble didn't really, you know, I didn't think too much about it, but I was just genuinely curious about this organization because of just that whole experience, which wasn't great to begin with, to be honest with you. Waiting 3 months for a yes or no, I thought was ridiculous for an entry-level position. But back then, they'd already decided, you know, that recruitment was one of their secret sources to creating great culture. So that's what I found out later on.
Awesome. And so what was your involved in your role? What did you do? Well, I guess from starting as a, first time in the workplace to what you ended up doing.
Well, that was the funny thing. You know, on day one, I actually didn't know what I was going to do. At that point, I still only knew that I was a good fit for the company. And that, you know, on day one, I would finally get kind of slotted into a specific team. And I knew I was going to broadly, I knew I was going to be in the sales side of the business. Not obviously, I'm not an engineer. I don't code. So I knew broadly where I was going to be. But did I know what product? Not really. Hadn't really a good idea of who my manager was going to be or team. I started with 80 other people, all from different places around Europe, all gathered in the Dublin office. It was a really confronting room of people to walk into on that day. But I ended up getting slotted into a lovely team, lovely sales team, amazing manager, made me feel right at home on that really kind of daunting first day. So, yeah.
Very cool. Is that like whereabouts located?
That was in the Dublin head office. Yeah, so that's where I started out. And I ended up in my career, my 10, almost 10 years moving around to Sydney, Australia, where I am now. And I moved from the sort of the business side to the people and culture side. And as you mentioned, to leadership development down the track.
Yeah. So tell me more about that journey. How did you go from where you were with Google? What was the, just tell us a little bit more about that journey, how you got from there to where you are today.
I think it starts with internally the philosophy being you could try anything. You didn't have to be necessarily, you know, super skilled in that area. And I did not have a HR background, but I had this passion for coaching as a sales leader. And I did see the power of coaching. It was something I was really interested in. And therefore, given a lot of projects around this that straddled both the business side and the L&D or sales enablement side of the business, which allowed me then to just dabble for a little while I was in Dublin. Seeing that there could be this amazing lever that you could pull around coaching, what it could mean from both a manager perspective and how fulfilled you become as a manager when you become a great coach, but also from a, you know, an employee perspective or a team perspective, how much more fulfilled and engaged you are in your role when you have a great coach as a manager. Those two things really just blew my mind. And I just wanted to move more into this space, understand more about what great managers do differently, understand what late great leaders do differently, and really see if we can dissect this and bring something to a company-wide level, you know, in a kind of more programmatic way, which was what sparked that initial move from one side to the other side. And I thought, well, while I'm at it, why not try a different country? You know, let's not stop at a whole career change. Let's move. Lock, stock, barrel, the whole family. And so we did. We moved from Dublin to Sydney. And it was a bit of a last sort of minute decision, but a really good one.
Very cool. And how long ago was that you moved?
Oh, we're here 10 years now. We just, through COVID, actually, we're the first round of citizens through just after things started opening up again. So we did our citizenship ceremony just at the tail end of COVID here. Yeah.
Yay. Well, congrats on your citizenship. Very exciting. So with how did you do that research into what makes a great manager? Did you just read a lot of books by, you know, some big names like Richard Branson, or did you listen to podcasts, or did you just talk to people? What was your strategy around that?
I didn't have one. I'm very lucky that, again, Google is crazy about data. They did some research on what is it that great managers do differently from the rest. It was no surprise to me that the number one thing was coaching, but this was then kind of backed up what was a gut instinct for me. And then, yeah, definitely they kind of came up with 10 other attributes of great managers, 10 other behaviors of great managers. They've called that Project Oxygen. That's widely available. You can Google it and you will find it. But yeah, there's some behaviors in there that I don't think anyone will ever disagree with, but they're what consistently is the difference between good and great managers.
Yeah, fantastic. So can anyone become a manager, or do you think only like certain people with certain skills and traits can actually do the role effectively? Like, is it something you can learn, or you do have to have the right personality in the first place?
Yeah, no, I'm a big believer that if you are motivated to learn, you can learn anything. You know, I'm a big believer in, you know, Carol Dweck's growth mindset. If you have the right mindset, curiosity, motivation, understanding that you will fail, but you can pick things up and learn from those failures, you can learn anything. So absolutely, I do believe that people can learn to be a great manager. But I do believe we have some systemic sort of pitfalls in organizations. For example, we tend to promote people into manager positions because they're technically great in their role. And we say, oh, if you're, you know, you're technically great at something, then if you lead people, then they will be technically great at that too, right? I think that's an assumption that over and over has proved maybe unfounded and not a great way to build leaders and build leadership teams. Testing for those sorts of behaviors that, you know, are around coaching, around collaboration, around, you know, helping others to progress in their careers and their chosen fields, inclusivity. These are the kinds of things, good decision making, being results orientated, mucking in whenever is needed, but at the same time, not micromanaging. These are the kinds of things you really need to test for before putting somebody into that kind of road and then helping them, you know, by giving them the right training, the right tools, the right resources, the right mentors, and then the right coaches for them as they graduate from being an individual contributor to leading a team. So I really think it's, yes, 100% learnable if the person is motivated to learn. But I also believe that you've really got to set that person up for success. And as your organization grows, you need to set teams of people and groups of people up for success together. So I think that's important to plan for and not just to kind of haphazardly, because it can cause chaos if the wrong people are promoted with no backup, no support, no training.
I've experienced that firsthand, like in my sales roles, and just managers go, they were the top salespeople, right? And then they've been put into a management role with no real guidance, and they got the technical aspects great, but they're not so good at maybe teaching it to others, or they forget to support, you know, be more about the positive reinforcement rather than the negative, and focusing on that. Because I've had my fair share of bad managers, I have to say. Those I've just always felt like I've never been good enough, or I'm like shaking to just ask them a question. And then I've had good managers where I've realized, oh, I can actually own up to my mistakes here and not feel like the world's going to end. But people just can't get thrown into it. So if you are listener right now thinking of putting someone to a management position, just keep in mind that's great, but just either be prepared to give them training or have the discussions with them. Like start, I've witnessed this before as well, start kind of getting people into the management headspace before they're actually promoted. So then it's not like a major shock to this new role, suddenly have to learn new skills and work out what their new role means and everything else.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess, you know, from a well-being perspective, what all those things can do to you when you don't feel valued, when you don't feel supported by your manager, when you don't feel coached, when you don't feel safe to make a mistake or to take a risk. It really does lead to stress, to burnout, to feeling undervalued, to disengagement, to potentially looking for a new role at the end of the day. You can have somebody who's the best performer in one team under one style of manager become the worst performer in another team because of a different style. And so it's really, really important from a well-being and mental health and wellness perspective to really arm your managers.
I love that. And so what are your, like from your experience, the typical mistakes managers make?
I guess, you know, one thing that pops up into everybody's mind is when you do move up in from an individual contributor where you are considered to be maybe technically one of the best, it's really hard to get your hands out of things. And so you become a micromanager. Again, if you're not given the tools around coaching and helping others to do, well, then you try and kind of say, I'll do it. I'll do it myself. I'll do it better. So I totally get that. You know, I think I kind of went through that myself when I became a manager for the very first time. I'll just do it. I'll just get it done quicker, easier, better quality. Nobody will know. And I'll just kind of, you know, do it in the background. I think that's one of the first things managers really struggle with. The art of coaching, the art of delegation, the art of empowering others. Letting them make mistakes, knowing it won't be done perfectly. But you're going to, you know, in taking that approach, you're actually lifting a lot of weight off your own shoulders in the long term. But again, that takes skill and it's something that's like a muscle that you build over time. So that's definitely pitfall number one that I notice. And pitfall number two that I notice is around change and how to communicate change. Being that middle manager, you're then tasked with understanding where the big picture is and where the organization is going and how to translate that from a team perspective and into individuals and what it means for them. And I do see over and over again, managers really struggle with this, really struggle to make it, you know, very personal so that they can tell stories and make the change sound it sort of contextualized, linking it to their values, company values, and bringing it to life in a way that's not so mechanical rather than, you know, we're going from A to B. And in order to do that, we're going to do these three steps. And people are thinking about, well, why are we doing this? What does it mean for me? What does it mean for the direction of the company? Did I really sign up for this? You know, all these things are percolating in people's minds, and managers do find it really hard to take the reins when it comes to change. And again, it's a skill. I mean, people go to uni to learn about change management. It's included in MBAs. It's not hard. It's not an easy skill to learn. So why do we expect first-time managers to be able to do this and be the front line where the rubber hits the road when it comes to communicating change? It's really not fair sometimes, I think, what we put upon first-time managers. It's not fair at all. And so, yeah, again, those are the kinds of pitfalls that I see. They're just two examples of maybe 20. I could go on for days. But all I'm saying is I get where managers are coming from when they're not given the right support. They are kind of left to flounder with a lot of these things. And it's up to organizations to really build in that network of support. So it's not just training. It's a network around people that they can call on, a community of other leaders, other managers inside and outside the organization that are there on hand to support somebody as they grow into that role.
Yeah, well, well said. And just so touch on those two points with the micromanagement thing, I have received that. And actually, I was talking with another copywriter who had a team of writers. And so it just sprung to mind his advice to me, and it was a whole bunch of us at the time, that if you do want to outsource work or if you're getting a team to do it, avoid the whole micromanagement thing. Don't, rather than thinking, oh, I could do a much better job, actually think, have they met the brief? Have they actually done what the client or what was asked of them? Even though it may be different to how you would have done it, as long as it's still good quality and they've done it, then that's enough, and kind of just let it go. And that was really great advice. It was a couple of years ago now that I got that. It's kind of stuck with me. So because now as I'm building a team, I'm keeping this kind of thing in mind, going, all right, yes, maybe a part of me is like, oh, I really want to change everything about that. But is it necessary? Because that's obviously very disempowering if you go and there's redo something, especially if you do it in front of them, or you discourage them by saying, oh, no, that was all completely wrong. So, yes, I 100% agree with that. And with the change thing, yeah, so I know what it's like. I've been in organizations where big changes happen, and if you are in a management role, people kind of looking up to you, but you may not know what's going on. I guess my take on that is just think about how you would feel if you were that next step down with absolutely no idea what's going on, and you just treat your team how you would want to be treated and respected, and give them as much information as you can in terms that they can relate to and they can see where they fit into the big picture. So that's just my little feedback on that.
And, you know, we've seen some great examples of it lately in the media. When you think about people like Gladys Berejiklian and Jacinda Ardern and any leader that's really been out there front, you know, front and center when it comes to any, for example, flare-ups with COVID recently, you can tell that they do some simple things really well. They show up every single day at the same time, whether they have news or not, and they brief everyone on what they do know. They're very open. They're very transparent with information. If they don't know, they'll tell you when they will know, and they turn up again with that information to hand. They tell you the why they've made a decision, the why behind that decision. And even though it might be a painful decision, like for the next week, we need to go back into lockdown. But they give you the real reasons behind that. They lead with empathy. They lead with understanding. They lead with, this is why we have to do it. We don't want to do it for a minute longer than is necessary. And you really truly believe them when they do come at the tough situations and the tough decisions with empathy and understanding. you almost feel for them in those moments. And you're thinking, God, I feel for her, you know, having to deliver this kind of news. And even though I'm the one that's going to have to suffer, I feel it's tough for her. So this is like, in a weird way, they're demonstrating, this is what great leaders do. And it's great. That's actually great change management skills that they're demonstrating. Show up, lead with empathy, make the hard decisions early, show the results later, you know, and say, you know, this is what we've achieved because we did that. So if we have to do it again, we see why it's important. They're like little tips that I've been picking up from watching various leaders on the news, some of them not doing so well as others, but you know, each and every one has a lesson in it.
Yes. Well, the ones that are like pure politicians that just avoid the question completely and kind of stick their statement, people lose respect for that. But those who are honest, like those amazing female leaders, then people just appreciate it. And we've had a lot of great feedback of how they handled the whole and are handling the COVID situation. So I guess that's an example of great leaders. What's a good leader? What's the difference between like a good manager and a great manager? What do you think if someone right now feels, yeah, I think I'm probably a good manager, like I listen to my team's problems and stuff and I coach them every now and again, but what could take them to that next level to be great?
I've written some down, so you will see me looking down, because I thought, yeah, this is a great question. I don't want to miss stuff out. And actually somebody in my team, Emma, wrote an article about this, which is up on our page on LinkedIn, the Culture Equation page. But I really do think there are some really key things, especially from a leadership perspective. So this isn't more the manager side, which we've been talking about. And I agree with all of Emma's 6 points on what do great leaders do differently. The first one is what we just said, they show up. And I think, again, from a change perspective, they really are consistent messaging, reinforcing that messaging, leading with empathy and understanding, celebrating actually the small little wins and milestones. And then when things change, looking back and kind of retrospectively looking at what worked and what didn't work and saying, we're learning as we go. Again, growth mindset in action. So that's number one. Number two is really genuinely caring. You can really tell. I mean, people these days, especially younger generations, they can sniff it out in an instant, whether somebody really genuinely cares about them, their career, their trajectory, where they want to go, and knowing that that means that their leader may have to let go of them at one point, and they might, you know, they might have to hand them over to another team, another leader. But they actually facilitate those introductions. They facilitate the way forward for that individual. So knowing that talent can't stay still forever, and being a great leader is not about just holding on and hoarding talent, but actually helping somebody through their career, opening doors and staying in touch with them. And to this day, my old boss, my very first boss from Google, who met me on day one down in that 80 person sort of room of, you know, lots and lots of Europeans talking in all kinds of languages, he still stays in touch with me to this day and says, how are you doing? How's the family? How's everyone going? That's the mark of somebody who genuinely cares. Third thing is just giving people a voice. You know, when it does come time to change, or, you know, strategy or direction or new services, new products, you know, people at the coalface are the ones with the great information. Give them a voice, give them a seat at the table, find ways to include them. And that is what real inclusion is. I'm a big believer that diversity is inviting people to a party and inclusion is asking them to dance. So that's number three. Number four is make a decision, take action. Don't kind of procrastinate. People don't like that waiting in between, you know. So really, you know, being decisive, backing that decision up with whatever means you think is important, and then moving forward. People like to feel that momentum. Then on the fifth one, taking all the responsibility and none of the credit. How many people will say, oh, my boss took all the credit for what I did and how I did it and never gave me any sort of, didn't give me a nod, you know, in terms of what I contributed or what I did there. And I think that's really important. That's a great one. And again, that's Emma and my team came up with that. And so I cannot take the credit for that one, obviously. But I think it's a great one. And I think it is the mark of a great leader. And the last one is speaking your truth, really getting comfortable with you, your story, where you come from on something. Your truth is important to people. It's authentic. It makes you who you are. And it's what people genuinely want to follow. People will join a company, but we all know they'll leave a manager. you yourself is what people are interested in. Your warts and all stories is something you have to get comfortable talking about, and people will follow you because they're inspired by you as well as where the organization is going. So those are kind of the six key areas we think that the culture equation are the difference between good and great leaders.
They are amazing. And I'll put it in the show notes as well where people can find that. That's such a great summary there. And I'm just going through my mind all the managers I had go, yes, they did that. I love that. And it's so true what you said about, you know, sticking around with a company, it quite often is the team that keeps you there. Like if you are well respected and you feel heard and appreciated by your manager, even if shit keeps hitting the fan and the rest of the organization, as long as you know that your manager has your back, you probably stick around. So that's all absolutely brilliant. And so what actions can our listeners start taking today to lead more effectively? Like, I guess there's a lot to, yeah, 6 points there. I guess it's a lot to kind of think, oh, I'm just going to change overnight. But what's kind of the first step? Like first thing they can start doing, is it making sure you're having one-on-one meetings regularly? Is it, consciously thinking of training opportunities? What do you recommend?
Well, just where I left off there, the first one is practice telling your story and weave it into whatever situation it may call for it. So I think people forget to do that. It is something you need to practice. It is something you need to... You know, a story leads people through a journey where you were one thing and you ended up another thing. Something ended up changing in you and you need to lead people on that journey. So I think that's really important. The second thing I think you can do immediately is ask for feedback. How often do you see leaders or managers ask their team for feedback? How am I doing? How's my driving? What do you think? What can I do better? What's one thing I could change tomorrow that would make me a more effective manager for you? And we forget that feedback goes both ways. We also know that if we want to encourage a culture of feedback, the quickest way to do that is to ask for feedback. It really builds trust and psychological safety quickly, but also just gives you the right tips to make you a great leader really, really quickly. So that's the second thing I would say is something you can do immediately. And the third thing is role model. You know, what are the behaviors you want to see, both in the organization and in the team? You know, be the tail that wags the dog. Get out there and role model the kinds of behaviors you want to see more of, and don't talk about them, do them.
Brilliant tip. So yes, everyone take note, starting small is just amazing. And then you'll get the results and you'll do the best work for your clients. Everyone will be happier, better morale, and, you know, people want to come to work. And isn't that a great experience to know that you're helping to make that happen for people? So I love it. And so I always ask my guests this, and it is, how do you take care of your health and wellness?
And I'm going to be the first one to admit I don't do a very good job of this. I left a company where you could have a lovely massage whenever you wanted. You could go down to do, you know, any kind of sport, yoga. It was like well-being was really embedded into Google, and I took advantage of all of that. And I must say, back in my corporate days, I think I had a better balance when it comes to well-being than I do now in the startup space, where I'm always running on empty. And I'm a mom of two and a wife, and I have a dog here next to me who's driving me crazy right now because he keeps humping his... Sorry, I shouldn't really say that, but he is. He's doing right next to me. His teddy bear. It's terrible. It's very distracting.
Very distracting, you know? Yeah.
So there's all kinds of things going on. And I must say, my kind of small little 10 minutes a day, whether it's just to take time with a coffee, no technology, and just sit with my thoughts, is something I really look forward to in the morning. I live near the beach, so I do love to go for a walk. I live near a beautiful kind of cliff walk. Love that. It's about an hour. And if I can squeeze that in, I do. If I do anything for a charity, I like to have it involve some kind of a challenge. So this month, I'm doing the extra mile challenge for the Cerebral Palsy Alliance, which means I'm trying to cover 100K in a month on a bike. So that gets me out consistently, although right now, because I've been sick for the last week, I haven't done anything, but I'm getting back on the bike tomorrow morning. Those are the kinds of things I like to do. And I have to say, I'm one of those people that recharges by being in others' company. So I really love spending time with my friends. I have the most beautiful set of girlfriends. We take a lot of weekends away with each other. We laugh like crazy, like packs of hyenas. And people can hear us from streets away. And I love that. I really do. I don't care about all the crazy stares we get in restaurants, because that's really what fills my bucket. And of course, time with my family and my lovely husband. So that's what I do.
Yes, I love it. Fantastic. Yes, spending time with a husband too. with the girlfriends, yeah. And occasionally I see my hubby. No.
there, Casey listens.
Yeah. My husband listens occasionally. Well, he doesn't really listen to my podcast, but he looks at all my social media posts waiting for me to mention him, I think. So how can people connect with you?
I love to hear from people, especially in the tech scale-up space. They're really trying to define their culture and struggling, because it is a war for talent out there. You need to define who you are as an organization, what you stand for, and that all is what is enmeshed in your culture. And I do work with fast-growing scale-ups. That's my sort of niche area. So anyone who kind of defines themselves at around, 50 people plus, up to about 400, 500, needs some support on that. They should get in touch with me via the website, where you can book some time in directly with me for a Zoom consultation. So go to my website and click on the Calendly link, and we can spend some time chatting about your needs.
Great. And of course, I'll put all that in the show notes, so you can easily find the links, so you can head on to the show notes page and find all of that. But thank you, Hiam. That was a great chat, a really great concise summary of good and great manager, some tips that everyone can just go out and take. And it's something I have always, because I've had so many negative experiences with managers, I've always been like, cool, I'll put that in the what not to do box, and I'll make a note of that when something's gone well. Oh yes, I want to be a manager like that in the future. So I hope, yes, today's episode has been that for you, all the good things that you need to be keeping in mind if you're currently managing or aim to be a manager in the future. Absolutely love it. So thank you so much. It's been great.
Oh, pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. And thank you, dear listener, for tuning in. You can find the show notes for the episode at marketingandme.com.au. And if you enjoyed listening, please subscribe and leave me a rating and review via your podcast app or at ratethispodcast.com/marketingandme. And if you're interested in connecting with me, feel free to reach out via LinkedIn. Just search for Leanne Shelton and let me know you're a fan of the show. Or you can book in a free 15-minute chat, and that will be in the show notes as well. I'd absolutely love to chat about how I can help you grow a thriving health and wellness business. Until next time, I wish you good health and good wealth.